the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, not since 1986 have we seen a tax reform as dramatic as what just got passed last year. It affects many individuals, depending on where you live, the size of your home, and how you file your tax return. Joining me on the program is one of the nation's top tax attorneys, Robert Wood. And Robert, I want to get right into this tax law because in previous tax laws, if we go back to 86, it was across the board. Tax rates were across the board. There weren't any phase-ins or phase-outs of deductions and other things like we have in this one. This is completely different, and it strikes me it affects people differently depending on the state you live in because of taxes, in the size of your home, your mortgage, and the value of your house.
It is different, although I was around in 1986. I graduated from law school and started practicing as a tax lawyer in 1979. So I vividly remember 1986, and it was viewed as kind of a sea change then, and it was in a number of respects. I mean, I think that was as fundamental a change in some ways, maybe even more so than the changes we have now. But I think when you talk about homes and the states that people live in and so on, I think you're alluding to state and local tax deductions being, you know, one of the huge changes that this new law is visiting on people. And it's certainly going to impact people significantly in California, where both of us live. And because state income taxes in California are very high, up to 13.3%, and state property taxes are not terribly high compared to the national figures, but with Prop 13, of course, a lot of it depends on when people bought their homes. And, you know, more recent homes, with the way property values are, tend to have high property taxes. So a $10,000 cap on an individual's ability to deduct the combination of state and local taxes, meaning property taxes and state income taxes, is a truly draconian kind of a change. And I think that is one that people don't really, and many people haven't really woken up yet or felt the pain yet, but I think they will.
You know, when you talk about that, you know, obviously there was some negotiations on, it wasn't just the deductibility of state taxes and the limitation on property taxes. They also reduced the deductibility of future home purchases in terms of a mortgage from $1 million plus a second to $750,000. Now, Robert, you know, $750,000 in Iowa, Nebraska could buy you quite a spread. But if you take $1 million house here in Southern California, or for example, San Francisco, where the median price is $1.4 million, or New York or New Jersey, that's nothing. So this obviously is going to impact real estate.
I agree, and I don't mean to minimize that change. I mean, I personally think, I guess if we're talking of this sort of sea change variety, I think the $10,000 limit is a bigger change or a more significant or potentially more hurtful change than the mortgage interest rule. But you're absolutely right. I mean, there are many people who believe that the $1 million limit on mortgage interest was not enough in California, and now cutting it to $750,000 on a prospective basis, that is a big change. And I agree with you, and I think many analysts have said, I'm, you know, not an analyst or an economist, I'm just a tax lawyer, but I think many analysts are saying that the real estate market is going to be hurt, but on the other hand, prices are crazy, and some people say that renters are being advantaged, and in some ways, absolutely they are. So I guess we can debate which is a bigger change, but they're all big changes, I guess, in the scheme of things.
You take a look at this. The thing about California, we have the highest income tax rate in the country. We also have high property taxes, high real estate values. But the one thing that a lot of Californians could do is if you were in a 39.6% tax bracket and you had $10,000 in state taxes or $10,000 in property taxes, or let's say a lot more, if you're Larry Lots of Bucks, you could always write that off on your tax return. What impact do you think it'll have now when somebody says, hey, I can't write that off. So I am in, let's say, the top tax bracket at 37. You add 13.3 for state of California. You're at 50% or over now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the math is going to be difficult, and people, you know, running numbers is almost always a good exercise. You know, the old stories about how this tax bill was going to dramatically simplify the law, I mean, that didn't pan out. I mean, this is not simpler. It is not simpler in most respects. It is in a few, but it's certainly not going to be a postcard-sized tax return. And there has been talk, and I don't know too much about this, but I know, you know, what I read and what I hear, and there was talk quite quickly in California and in some other states when this was not even quite passed. I think it was just passing, that California might retool its tax system. And I believe California is not the only state looking at this. I think that's a tall order, and I kind of don't think it will happen. But, I mean, it is an interesting idea, and it might be a good idea. The proposal that I heard being discussed, and there were some politicians talking about this, was to change and dramatically cut and possibly even abolish, although I think that's unlikely, the state income tax. And in lieu of it, to have a state payroll tax, which would be deductible and would not run afoul of this federal $10,000 rule. So it's an interesting idea. It could dramatically change the tax picture in California. I mean, another thing on a very practical level that I am already seeing, and I suspect that many other tax lawyers in California are seeing this too, probably accountants as well, and that is clients who are expressing interest in moving and clients who then follow through with that expression of interest and do it. It's always been true in California that some people move away, and as they compute how much tax they're going to pay. In my experience, it's often based on a particular event, a sale of a company going public, some kind of big legal victory, a big lawsuit recovery where suddenly the person is going to, you know, have a great slug of income. And so before any of these big income events occurs, people who plan or can plan sometimes think about moving to Nevada or Texas or Florida or Washington, you know, some state that doesn't have a state income tax. I think that's always been true. And over the last few years, it's been more true. And very recently, I'm seeing even more of it. So I think we're going to see more of that in the future.
You know, it's interesting. I think I read a figure that California is dependent on the taxes of 166,000 taxpayers compared to a population of 30 million. I think that was in the Wall Street Journal. What happens, because they did a story after this law was passed. For example, in the state of Connecticut, a hedge fund manager moved himself, a billionaire, in his operation to Florida, and the state lost over $200 million in tax revenues. So, does California run the risk at some point where there is just too much taxes, whether it's income taxes, whether it's property taxes, whether it's sales taxes, fees on everything from utilities to cell phones to, you know, the price of gas? At some point, somebody says, as you mentioned, you know, hey, I work here, I'm selling my company, or I'm going to get a big bonus or some kind of financial event that turns out to be substantial, and somebody starts calculating 13.3% a year in California, makes a lot of sense to go to Texas or Florida.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, some people, I guess, if you look at, I don't know if this is generational or just a change in the technology that we all have now, or, you know, possibly some of both, but I mean, some people are extremely mobile. I mean, right now, I guess this is a separate topic, but of course, anyone reading the newspaper these days knows what cryptocurrency gains have become, and, you know, Bitcoin and others have been sort of posting stratospheric returns. And although they're very volatile, there are an awful lot of people now who are, you know, so-called Bitcoin millionaires. And many of these people, in my experience, are young, and they can, you know, move to Nevada or Texas or somewhere fairly easily, and they can take their cryptocurrency with them and sell it there. And so, I mean, I think that's sort of, you know, yet another thing. But, you know, people moving, you know, more established people, people with companies where they are not merely looking at their own personal income, you know, but maybe the sort of the entire company as well. There have been efforts a few years ago. I think Rick Perry, who was then governor of Texas, I don't remember what year this was, but I remember he did kind of a tour through California promoting his state, promoting Texas as a source for business and people and companies to move to. I don't know how successful he was. I know Governor Brown was not happy about it. I mean, California is a great state, but absolutely, if you add up the taxes, it is tempting for some people. And I think with the federal changes that we now have and this deduction limit that we now face, I do think there's going to be more of this.
So given this fact, I know there are some individuals in California, I wonder if you might just cover this, that have set up kind of trust to transfer assets, because California does not distinguish between capital gains and ordinary income. They're known as Ning or Wing Trust. I wonder if you could explain these, and will these be challenged?
No, I'm glad you brought up the topic, and I was intending to if you didn't, but it shows that you're savvy to be asking the question. These have not been publicized much in my experience, and along with the topic I just mentioned, which is people moving out from California, or some people moving out, I think this Ning and Wing and Ding trusts, which I'll describe, you know, absolutely you're right, there are going to be more of these, and yes, I do think they'll be challenged. So a Ning or Ding Trust, Ning is Nevada Incomplete Gift Non-Grantor Trust, and Ding would be Delaware Incomplete Gift Non-Grantor Trust. Wing, the last of the three, is Wing, the W is Wyoming. So, and there probably will be others. Those are the three that I know of, and they're all basically similar or the same, a type of trust that a person, including a person in California, might set up. Many people who are listening probably have regular old so-called living trusts, revocable trusts that people use for estate planning so that they avoid probate. And basically, any person can form a living trust, and the idea is that the trust is, for tax purposes, sort of not a separate entity. Your income just flows through to you individually. You're still considered the owner for tax purposes of the assets, even though this living trust is very effective for avoiding probate on your eventual death. So that kind of a trust, a living trust, isn't any help when you talk about state taxes, or federal for that matter. These sort of strange trusts, the Ning and Ding and Wing trusts, the idea is that they're kind of a hybrid, and they have a trustee in one of these so-called good states, meaning Nevada or Delaware or Wyoming, and it could be an individual. Normally, it's a trust company, and there are some in those states that do it. The idea, as you just said, is that you might put some assets in one of these trusts, and if it's set up properly, and I think they can be set up properly. I mean, I've done a few. And the trust is the owner of the assets. The individual who funded it, the grantor, is not the owner of the assets anymore. And the trust then in Nevada or Delaware or Wyoming has income that is sitting and probably not distributed in the trust. And it is not taxed, at least hopefully not taxed, by California, because there isn't a California beneficiary. That is typically the grantor, the person in California who forms this kind of a trust, would designate children. So it's kind of an estate planning device as well. But the idea is that you hope that in a certain term of years, when the assets are sold or distributed, that the beneficiaries, which in my example is the kids, are not California residents. So the idea is you're not only delaying California tax, but also sidestepping it entirely. I'm sort of oversimplifying, but as to controversy, California has not, the Franchise Tax Board, to my knowledge, still has not taken a position on these things. They have said they are studying them. I mean, they are aware that these kinds of trusts are being done. They started in New York State, and New York quickly changed the law to basically say, if you do one of these things, it is still going to be subject to New York State income tax. And that was done by the legislature, by statute. So I would predict California could change the law. I think it is probably more likely, as you intimated, that they will be challenged in a sort of an audit and then an eventual legal challenge that could be a litigation in California. That tends to be what California does, as opposed to trying to change the law by statute. But, I mean, we don't know. But I think as there is uncertainty, and to go back to this $10,000 deduction limit, I think more people are going to be upset by California's high rate, by the $10,000 limit, which doesn't provide much of a deduction. And as you said some minutes ago, the lack of a capital gain tax rate in California, I think that has often been sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back. It's what pushes people, in my experience, sort of over the edge and makes them think, you know what, I don't want to be paying this much to California, and I want to either move out if I can, and there's a whole process about doing that, or if I can't move out, but I'm looking at carving off some assets that I hopefully can succeed in avoiding paying California tax on those assets, set up one of these trusts, and try to obviate some of the taxes that way. I mean, I do think there's going to be a lot more of this.
What are the possibilities also that states begin to, let's say, modify taxation? Obviously, you know, when you take a look at states like Florida, Nevada, Texas, even Washington State, and especially I would think, Robert, with a lot of these high-tech entrepreneurs or employees, you know, you work at Apple or you work at Facebook, you have options that could be worth multiple millions, that these states eventually do modify and maybe go towards eventually what may happen in this country, a consumption tax.
Yeah, you may be right. And, you know, I don't know as a matter of sort of economic theory if that's a good thing or not. I mean, people have been talking about that for decades, I believe. I think it's kind of unlikely, but I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I do think, as I said, I was really intrigued that really before this big tax bill passed, there was already discussion among legislators about trying to alter California's tax system. And I think other states were looking at this too in favor of some kind of payroll tax. In other words, I think there was concern not only for the state, but also for its residents about, you know, what the impact of this was going to be. And I think those are hard things to do, but I think they're possible. And I don't think that discussion is over. I also, by the way, I just read recently that there are some lawsuits being planned. Maybe they've already been filed. And I think these are by, I don't know if these are by states or if these are by private parties, you know, sort of in league with states, suing to attack the lack of a state and local tax deduction. And I don't know if these lawsuits are going to be based on some kind of constitutional argument or what exactly. But, I mean, I think there are a fair number of people who are kind of riled about some of the tax changes and the state and local tax deduction in particular. And I think it's early on. It's only January, but I think we're all going to see more developments that are going to be interesting to watch and that may impact all of us.
What about the idea of an exit tax? A lot of our listeners may not realize this. There were a number of years that California used to tax your pension after you left the state. Let's say I spent 30 years here working for SDG&E, and I decide that I'm going to go retire in Las Vegas or Henderson, Nevada, or someplace in Texas. They would tax the pension for a number of years until they lost that case in the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and you mentioned an exit tax. I am a tax lawyer that I do 100% tax, but a wide range of tax issues. So I see lots of federal tax issues as well. And one of those is federal exit tax. So, I mean, I have seen U.S. citizens give up passports, give up their citizenship when they have citizenship somewhere else and go through the sort of federal exit tax procedures. And same thing for long-term U.S. green card holders who give up their green card. So there's sort of a federal model on how that works. And you're right that California has long had a policy of chasing people who leave. And, you know, oftentimes, and I've handled a lot of those kinds of residency issues and disputes, and often it is not so much based on California trying to tax the person forever as not having left, but rather a question of timing. That is, often the state is able to say, because it's typically a number of years later when one of these disputes comes to a head, Often the Franchise Tax Board is able to say that they agree that a particular taxpayer is no longer a California resident. However, often the dispute is over exactly when that move took place. Did it happen in March or did it happen in October? And sometimes that kind of a date disparity can mean, you know, many dollars to the state. And there, some assets are considered California source income no matter what, like a real property sale in California. Even if you're a Florida resident, but you sell your California home or your California plot of raw land, you're still going to pay California tax on that. But, you know, I haven't heard it sort of an exit tax seriously discussed in California, but I guess it's possible.
And I guess a final question, given all the tax laws that we've seen, we haven't seen anything this dramatic, probably going back, you'd have to go back to 1986. I mean, the tax rates have gone up, the tax rates have gone down. There hasn't been really too much dramatic changes as we've seen in this last bill passed. Do you expect this to hold its course, or do you think that there's enough momentum building in states like our own state of California, New York, Illinois, New Jersey, other states like that, that this changes somehow politically? In other words, it doesn't remain in its present form as it is stated now.
I don't know. I really don't. To be honest, I was surprised to see that there are stories about lawsuits being planned, you know, and I don't know, as they say, if those will be some kind of constitutional argument or what. I mean, lawsuits are expensive, you know, they take a long time. And I have to confess, although it's been some weeks now since I remember reading this and hearing it, I was surprised to hear people in states like California talking about some kind of changes in the tax system to sort of reduce or eliminate state income tax and instead ramp up some other taxes that wouldn't run afoul. You know, basically, these are viewed as an end run around the changes in the federal tax law. I mean, it's really interesting to watch, but I think it's too early to say how it's all going to shake out. The one thing that I do think is going to happen, because I'm already seeing it, as I mentioned, is the sort of individual response, and that is something that people control. So the people who can move and who decide, you know, weighing benefits and burdens of the great things in California and some of the high costs, and this federal income tax change that impacts, you know, their deductibility of state income taxes, and I guess the mortgage interest point that you make as well. And they may say, you know what, on balance, maybe I don't want to be here. And I think some of those people are going to make those decisions. California is going to have an administrative challenge chasing people. It's good at doing it. It's going to keep doing that, I think. And, you know, as the point that you brought up, I think quite correctly about Ning and Ding trusts, there are going to be more of the, you know, whatever California does, unless it sort of outlaws them by statute. I mean, California is going to have more of those, and it's going to face more of those as a planning tool that people are going to adopt. I think those are inevitable things that are going to happen.
So as a tax lawyer, would you advise, let's say if you're Larry Lots of Bucks or somebody has substantial state income taxes, property taxes, or capital gains, to meet with their tax advisor or planner? Because a lot of times these laws get passed, and it was passed, goes into effect this year, but a lot of people may not see the results until, let's say, April of 2019.
Yeah, I do think, I mean, it's never a bad idea to plan ahead. So, I mean, I do think that sort of taking stock of your situation is smart. I mean, I suspect, and I think everyone kind of breathes a sigh of relief after the end of the year and is hoping for a little bit of a respite, so not everyone is digging into these issues immediately. But I also think that many people will dig into them long before the end of calendar 2018. And I think it would be wise to do it long before the end of calendar 2018. And one reason I think that helped people focus on the state income tax issue and property tax issue a little more fully was the whole sort of circus at the end of 2017 associated with prepaying. So, I mean, as you know, as you probably remember, there was a provision in the federal tax law, the bill, that said basically in layman's terms, you can't prepay your 2018 taxes your property taxes or your state and local income taxes in order to sort of get around this $10,000 deduction. And so, you know, the IRS released additional sort of information about that. There was a whole question about what's considered a prepayment and what is an assessed tax. And there was a lot of discussion toward the year end about that. And I think, you know, people, a lot of people did prepay or did pay and are claiming deductions, and then we'll see what happens. But I think the fact that that did occur means more people are a little savvier than they otherwise would have been. And so hopefully people won't be waiting until, you know, the end of 2018 or, God forbid, 2019 before they think about these things.
Well, listen, Robert, I appreciate you coming on the program. If our listeners would like to contact you regarding the tax services and advice that you provide, how could they do so, please?
Sure. The name of my firm is Wood LLP. Our office is in San Francisco, although we tend to have clients spread all over the country. Our office phone number is 415-834-1800. My direct line is 415-834-0113. And people are welcome to call me. And my email address is wood@woodllp.com. So woodllp.com is our web address.
Well, listen, thanks so much for coming on the program. A happy new year to you. And thank you so much.
My pleasure. It's nice of you to have me, and happy new year to you as well.
That concludes my interview with Robert Wood, considered one of the nation's top tax attorneys. And of course, he lives and practices in one of the wealthiest states in the country. But as we were talking there, you know, one of the things he said, you know, states are trying to figure out, okay, how's this going to impact us? What do we need to do to maintain our tax revenues without losing people? Because if they keep raising rates, they're just going to drive people out. And it was rather interesting. His one comment is the one thing that you can do is you can just simply pick up your feet and move across the border to another state and avoid it. And as he said in his practice, he's seen a lot more of it in the state of California. I predict you're going to see a lot more of it in the years ahead as people escape the high cost of living, the high taxation, and move to places where taxes are lower, the pace of life is slower, and the cost of living is much cheaper. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.